how I dressed and how my hair was at the time, it just represented how I like to do hairdressing.
I say it to our youngsters as they come along, you know, it's the point you've learned what you're learning. Now you need to discover, and you need to kind of get comfortable in your skin as a hairdresser, as a barber. You need to find out what you like doing, because that's the clientele you'll attract. Yeah, you know, it's what you want to do is what you'll get.
Even how you shoot your content afterwards. Mm. Like, if you are basically looking at a screen and seeing what's doing well and getting the engagement, and then you mimic that, like, everything then is just going to look the same. Like, you have to find your own style, and that just comes with confidence and also doing it yourself and learning. Well, I actually think now it's so much easier to do what you want to do than it did when I first started. Yeah. Instagram only just started out, you know, we were still on MySpace and Bebo and Facebook back then, do you know, like, so
I can't tell you how old that makes me feel. I'm like pre-internet. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban, and you're watching the Noble Barber Podcast. We're here to cut through the crap of the industry and give the answers, or at least try and find the answers to the problems that all of us as business owners struggle with every day. Thanks very much for watching. I hope you enjoy the episode. Hi there. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and I'm here today with Kai Wilson. Hi, Kai. Thank you, mate. Glad to meet you.
Nice one, dude.
This is the bit where I ask you to kind of give us a quick précis, do your own introduction, because I'm not very good at my research.
Yeah.
So, you know, how you got into the industry and kind of where you're up to now.
Sweet, man. Basically, I needed a job. That's how it all started. When I was 18, I just come out of music college, and I needed a job, and my dad was adamant that I needed to get into a trade. So electrician, plumbing, something like that. He's a decorator himself. Right. And I used to help him out in the summers and just to get a bit of cash, basically to fund my nights out. And back then, no one would give me an apprentice because I was 18, and it basically ran
funding
out after that year.
Out,
yeah. So every time I went in, you know, I was in a suit, I had a clean driving license, so I could drive, which is a bonus coming out of someone that would be 16, for instance. And they would always opt for these young 16-year-olds, and I don't know whether that was so they could mold them easier from there, because like when you're 18, you've just got that little bit more about you, I guess. So I remember coming out of a job interview for a plumber's, and I didn't get it. And I was walking past his hairdressers called Daniel Gray and Kendall, and just walked in and asked to speak to the manager and asked for a job. And I literally started on the Monday. And I was really lucky at that moment in time that they would rather someone older, because they knew that, you know, they would be working harder. They wouldn't want to be on an apprenticeship wage for the 3 years or whatever. So I kind of fast-tracked it with their guidance. You know, they were awesome, giving me the solid foundation that I needed into hairdressing and men's hairdressing. And that's kind of just where it started and just took off, you know. Qualified within a year. They opened a new shop and put me in that. And it was mad. Like, back then they charged the same price for everyone.
Oh, so nice one.
It was quite a daunting experience for me, not really having that hairdressing knowledge, basically, to like go into
it. Competing against the guys that have 10 years experience.
It was really good. And then I went back to the original salon. It was in Kendall, which was, it was a massive, massive salon. Lots of people, different realms of lives that were working in there, from London or Brighton. Or so you had a bit of that sort of city experience being in this like rural salon. But, you know, like I say, I got the best foundation in hairdressing. Like they really honed in on the education for the youngsters that were, or the new people that were starting, not even young, because some of them were 30, 40 year olds that are getting into hairdressing, you know. So,
Great thinking company.
It was banging. It like set me up really. And gave me the drive for the rest of it, you know. I wanted to do all the shows and do all the fashion weeks, and it just kind of like led on from that. I won a scholarship with L'Oreal back in the day. And so that was called ID Artist.
Right.
And it was really, really, still is like going. But for me, it was a really good experience to like be thrown into like 200 hairdressers or whatever it was that were all within the UK, meeting up, doing seminars, and the education that we got from that was amazing, from presenting skills from Simon Shaw and And yeah, and then you were doing the shows as well. So you're getting that sort of experience of like prepping your models, planning, like all of that, which obviously plays a huge role and part into what I do now.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, and then moved to London.
Nice one. So you had set up at your own shops, didn't you? You set up two.
Yeah. So after I worked in some salons in London, basically I was getting like every single opportunity at any hairdresser would like die for.
Excellent.
And for some reason it was just like never enough. And I just had a conversation with Adam Reed, who I was working for at the time at Percy & Reed, with Paul and Adam, and we decided just to part our ways naturally and set up on my own. So the first shop was in Clapton in London, and I basically lived above the backwash and set up a freelance destination. And back then, like, no one could care about that. Like, so essentially it got hired out in the whole time that I was there, twice, I think, and I was there for 2 years.
Wow.
And then, you know, living and working in the same space is quite hard.
Yeah.
And you wake up, you do your clients, and then I was working really late, and, you know, I was like going out with them afterwards and just repeating the process. And, you know, the money was great, and that was all cool and stuff, but like it just sort of takes its toll massively. So I actually wanted to, well, I was moving in with my girlfriend, and I wanted to downsize. So as in like, just not as in like the size of the space, but how much I was paying, because I was paying for accommodation and a studio. Yeah. And I went to see this space that my mate Sonny McCartney, who's an amazing photographer, had. And he told me about this studio that he just got. So I went to have a look at it. And what happened is I went for the biggest space in the warehouse, and my finances went up instead of down, but the opportunity was just like amazing. Incredible. And that was then geared up to creating the social. And I already had the social already with the previous one, but like it was only just me and like in it. There was three chairs. It was cool as we had like illustrations all over the wall, and that just to make the space feel like there was more in there than there was.
Yeah.
So loads of quirky stuff like that. But this space that we got, the Mark II version, was just like incredible. And when I opened the first one, I also opened one in the Lake District, and that was also in this like, it's called The Factory. It's in Off the Beaten Track. Loads of creatives in there from like graphic designers, pottery, all that type, gyms, pizza bars, like all that type of stuff. So it was really, really cool. Like, it was really cool. And I did it for nearly 10 years, you know, so.
But I think that's what, because as I said to you before, when we were talking about you coming on, you're in that very small group of people who describe themselves as hairdressers rather than barbers.
Yeah.
But you kind of first came on my radar really from your men's collections that you were doing.
Yeah.
Which were brilliant. I mean, really, really gorgeous. And I've had a couple of conversations. I think it's, is it Charlie? Was it Charlie Rose?
Oh, yeah.
He calls himself? Men's. I can't remember, but he's got another phrase for it, which I quite liked. I'm not taking the piss, Charlie, honestly. But I kind of like this kind of division of names, because I think some barbers that are gave you more kind of traditional clip joints get pissed off with, you know, they're hairdressers, and then there are kind of, you know, the new breed of barbers that are working in kind of, you know, stronger environments and charging more.
I just never found
this kind of new phrase.
Yeah. I just never understood the competition that was there. Like, basically the reason why I got into men's hairdressing more is because I used to cut hair back in the day for like £5 at my mum and dad's house when I was training. And that was essentially beer money.
Yeah.
And then
I just
found that easier. Yeah. Like, I found it easier to get models. I found it easier to, and I just built up a clientele. So when it actually came for me to be taught men's hairdressing or barbering or whatever you want to call it, like, I was very
you were there already. Almost.
I was very cocksure of myself, and I was like, I can do this. Like, and then they put basically Dan and Nick, my bosses at the time, they put me on the shop floor straight away doing a Saturday doing men's. So like, and that was it, because there, you know, I was older and they knew I was coming to the end, so they were going to have to be paying me more. So it was a way of me making them money and also me making myself more money, gaining the experience on the shop floor and going from there. And I just had this really, you know. The guys from Skorum in Rotterdam, when their shops came out and it was like that traditional sort of barbering, you know, I was really intrigued with that, with like the cutthroat shaving and, you know, not forgetting I was from a salon that at the start wasn't allowing me to use clippers. So we had to do scissor over comb for, you know, for skin fades. I'd put myself on a cutthroat shaving course because I wanted to learn that. I even did threading on like neck hairs, which I would never, ever recommend. You know, that fucking kills, man. But yeah, it was just from that. And then I used to wear 3-piece suits. I used to wear my hair at like rockabilly. And I started getting put in this little bracket as a men's hairdresser, barber.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I didn't actually like it because I was more than that. Mm. Like I could do more than that. The majority of my clients were women doing colour and cut services. Do you know? Yeah. Like, and then, you know, I still do have a really good balance between that, but I don't like being pinpointed. I don't like being labelled with anything.
Well, I think for a good while, your reputation definitely seemed to be that menswear.
Yeah.
That menswear group.
Yeah. And at the time you had, you know, Kevin Lutchman, Jodie Taylor, like Charlie Cullen, like, you know, they were the three boys really that I would have said that that thing. And I felt like I was doing more women stuff as well. So, and the shoots and stuff that I was doing was predominantly women and the celebrities and the musicians. And like, I just wanted to get away from that. So I basically dropped the suits, started wearing my hair curly, more natural, and sort of like how I wanted
steps
to
away from the kind of barber.
I just wanted to, like how I dressed and how my hair was at the time. It just represented how I like to do hairdressing.
No, but I think there's a big part of that. You know, I say it to our youngsters as they come along, you know, it's the point you've learned what you're learning. Now you need to discover and you need to kind of get comfortable in your skin as a hairdresser, as a barber. You need to find out what you like doing, because that's the clientele you'll attract.
Yeah.
You know, it's what you want to do is what you'll get.
Yeah.
If you're kind of constantly trying to be something else, yeah, it's more of a trial and you're not going to enjoy it as much.
Yeah. Authenticity wins all the time. Yeah, so, and the beauty of it as well is you can change. Mm. Like if you're into something at one point, you know, most hairdressers have got ADHD, like most creatives do, and they will hyperfix on a certain topic or subject or whatever it is at that moment in time, whether it's creating content or whether it's coppers or whether it's skin fades or whatever it is. Yeah. And it's not necessarily like what the trends are, but it's like just what they're into at that moment in time, and then they'll change. And like, I actually think that's all right. Like,
well, especially seeing, like you say, your kind of pathway has been very kind of creative.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we get, I get lots of messages from people. Thank you very much. Regarding, you know, that sphere, there's a lot of guys that have worked really hard to get behind the chair and they want to get into something else. And, you know, your route definitely, and it always seems to be the way, it's who you've worked with, the situations you've got yourself in and pursued to go down that route.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I've done London Fashion Week, I've done these different bits, but it was really, you know, under the cloak of somebody else of, I want to do that. So I made myself work there and ran through it.
Yeah. It's all about taking them opportunities, isn't it? Mm. Like 100%, you just got to throw yourself into whatever it is that you want to do.
And I think, I mean, I don't know what your experience is, but I think people are quite much more approachable than you think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I speak to lots of people and I hear lots from lots of people who have said, oh, you know, how do I get it? I don't know how to get there. And going to just to events and going up to someone and chatting to them or following it up with a DM or something, people are really approachable. I mean, I'm amazed by how approachable people are.
They are, like, no matter who it is.
And our industry want to help.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It's definitely the way that, what I actually think now, it's so much easier to do what you want to do than it did when I first started. Yeah. Instagram only just started out, you know, we were still on MySpace and Bebo and Facebook back then, do you know, like, so
I can't tell you how old that makes me feel. I'm like pre-internet.
Well, I was also, do you know, growing up, but it's now, like, the fact that you have instant access to anybody that you really want,
yeah,
like, And finding even if it's someone that's got like a higher status that you don't think is possible, like it's easy to find out who represents them. It's easy to get them in. I've done it before, like with bands that I wanted to shoot or work with closely. Like I would find their manager. I would offer them a haircut. They would come in. I would introduce them. Like it's hairdressing is so good for like building relationships like that. And that's how I built all like my musician clients up, like back in the day. Like it was going through their managers, getting them in, offering my services, giving them a haircut. They love it, and then they invite the band in, and then it goes from there. You know, like then you just never know where them opportunities are going to go. But being available is obviously the key.
Yeah, and if you're not knocking on a door, no one knows you're there. I think that's half the problem. I think there's a lot of people that want to do it. Yeah, and you got that opportunity, and I think we're seeing more and more people who are now seeing Insta as a way of having their portfolio in their pocket.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah.
I'm not sure a lot of the portfolios are as varied as they should be. I'm always a bigger fan that if you want to stand out from the crowd, put on a brighter shirt.
Yeah.
And I think with some of the Instagram, it's quite samey. Yeah. Hairdressing and barbering. But you've got that, and they're not making that next stage of kind of like, I've done all of this, and they're waiting for people to come to them.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work like that. It still is a matter of knock. You've got to get up and knock on the door.
Yeah, it'll always be the way though. Like if you've just not naturally got it, it's kind of hard, isn't it? So you will, you know, I tend to try to not follow hairdressers or barbers, you know, like I'm just going to call them collectively as hairdressers. Yeah, like
there's no fascism here. No. We all are, I don't mind.
But yeah, like then I end up copying. Like it's just a natural thing to do. And like even how you shoot your content afterwards, like if you are basically looking at a screen and seeing what's doing well and getting the engagement and then you mimic that, like everything then is just going to look the same. Like you have to find your own style, and that just comes with confidence and also doing it yourself and learning, you know, or finding someone, outsourcing someone that you do like the style of and working closely with them for a good few years. So then you develop the similar, you know, taste and aesthetic that you want.
And I think that's it. I've always been much more kind of drawn to designers and photographers. I love following photographers.
Yeah.
And I was always very quick to go to, you know, gallery openings of photography. I've always found that much more appealing. I think it fits better with my kind of creative side.
Yeah.
But, you know, and again, you know, with Insta, I guess is the only topic we're going to end up with on this is, you know, you see a trend come out and like everyone follows it, you know. Yeah, there's a Wes Craven act and everyone seems to follow it. And that's that. It doesn't work to stand out in our industry to, oh, I'll do that too. You know, it is a matter of, like you say, that honesty, that authenticity is, this is what I want to talk about. This is what I want to be.
Just, it all depends for me. It all depends on, you know, and it's taken me years to develop this mindset, but it all depends on what you're doing it for. You know, like most people, I would say, are doing it for fame, or they're doing it for having that spotlight on them. So they'll do all these stupid tricks to beat the algorithm. And I know that my social media has a ceiling. Like I know that it's only going to develop so much because it's the type of content that I'm producing. Like it's never going to get millions of views because I'm not bothered about playing that game. I've tried it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And succeeded. And then I'm like, what am I doing?
But again, I think it's who rather than how many, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think we can all get caught up in, you know, tens of thousands, 50s of thousands, 500,000. And you know, hey, if that's your gig, then great. But I really like the kind of interaction, knowing who's there. And I think that's a really true point. But it takes quite a lot of courage to get to that.
Yeah, I mean, it takes years to develop that mindset.
For you to turn around and go, actually, this is what I like.
Yeah.
You know.
That's it. Like if I'm putting other stuff on there that I'm literally just doing it for clout. Like,
But have you found that? Is that part of your makeup? Are you kind of, you know, a bit of a stroppy git? Are you like, this is my way, I've had enough, now I'm going to go and do something else?
No.
I mean, to turn around to Adam and being having all that great experience and kind of go, I'm going to kind of go and do my little thing now. That's quite ballsy.
I guess it's just making sure I'm happy at what I'm doing, you know, and that's, I never... authenticity has got to be the key, like, and it's the thing that shines through, and I guess it's why I get booked for jobs I won't do something and I won't be in that opportunity, that scenario, if I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
So like it's not necessarily being stroppy. It's just.
Oh, I don't mean stroppy as in you're an absolute nightmare to work with.
I'm a diva.
But there is a point about that kind of that focus to kind of go, you know what, I think I'm done here.
Yeah.
This isn't making me, yeah. You know, it's not, nothing's making me, it's just, it's not my thing anymore.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that's, you know, having that courage of your convictions to kind of go, it's been lovely, but
yeah.
It's quite a big call, I think.
A prime example of that is when I shut the social. Do you know, like, do you know, things happen in my life where it acted as a catalyst, so it made that. So I got ill, really, I got really ill last year, and it sort of changed my mindset, my perspective on things. I wasn't really digging the social anymore anyway. Like, I'd gone from doing 7 days a week to being there all the time to doing three. Did that for a lot of years, do you know, like, especially after lockdown and stuff. But that was the main thing that I did, a little video, like a signing out video to say, just to address it to the industry that it's gone. And the company won't be there anyway, and et cetera. Not just the space, like the whole brand. I just wanted to get, I could have sold it, you know, but I didn't want to. Like, I didn't want someone else running what I'd built for the last 10 years.
It was closed book.
And that was the main thing that I got from a lot of people. They're like, you're so brave doing that. And I was like, it's just, I just know when to quit. Like, not even quit. I just know when to move on to the next chapter. Like,
But it is quite, I mean, I think it's to kind of live in a kind of, to live outside of your comfort zone is quite a tough place to live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To kind of go, oh, I'm all content and this is working. Fuck it, I'm going to go and do something else.
Yeah, I love it though.
And then you've jumped now. The other thing that came to mind was you know, a lot of people have setups in their spare room or garden shed. I'm not calling yours a garden shed, but you've done this amazing home space, or what do you call it?
Just a studio, yeah.
And it's beautiful. I mean, you know, for the amount of effort and love you've put into it, you'd think it had high street appeal that everyone's wondering by looking in the window, because the look of it is amazing. But it is just for people who know they're coming to you anyway, and for you to work in.
Yeah, exactly.
Why put yourself through that expense to make it such a pretty place?
So after I got ill and shut the salons, we were already in the process of building this. So my girlfriend is a hairdresser and we've got two kids and she needed a space to work. You know, she spent so many years doing it in the house.
Right.
And like, we had a portable backwash in the bathroom constantly. It's just an eyesore, do you know, like, but comfort is there for the clients. And then I actually found my like dream space that I loved. And this was at the very, we were coming to the end of the build of District. And Lauren was like, don't go and look at it. And she was like, you're not getting it. And I was like, yeah, but I'm just going to go and look at it. And it was my dream space. But then you do the figures and, you know, I've been in the game long enough to know that investing all that money into someone else's pocket and essentially making someone else richer or not even richer, but just like the space and what we would offer would be better off us being there. Do you know, like, I was like, I might as well add that value onto my own property. Like when you build a garden room, like no matter what you use it for, it adds 5 to 10% onto the value of your property. So you've also got to, I worked that out. Do you know, like, how much can I invest into this to get the return back on it without it actually having to be a salon?
Yeah.
Do you know, like, but yeah. And then my attention to detail is basically what's got me to where I've got to.
You couldn't have a less than perfect space.
No, and it's still not perfect, and that is the story of my life. Like, I am never satisfied.
Is that for you, or is that for your clients,
never,
or a
happy.
Bit of both?
It's more for me. Yeah. When I'm doing something, I want to.
It looks like it's. I mean, it looks lovely. I really am. Even as a store owner, and I'm on high streets and stuff. I did look at it. I was like, it's just beautiful.
Yeah,
it's in your back garden.
It is just. Yeah, it is just for me. Yeah, like I do very little clients now.
Right.
A lot of my stuff that I shoot, I shoot content in there. I do a handful of paid clients. Like, they are regulars, but like, especially in the hair world, they prolong their appointments. So I get a lot of new people all the time as well, or just coming off of that one-off experience or twice a year experience or whatever that they're investing their money into to have nice hair.
Yeah.
It just depends. Like sometimes someone will message me and I'll be like, yeah, I've got quite a week that week, so I'll fit them in, do you know? Like, but to get back in with me, it's hard. There's no booking system online anymore. Like, they have to message me. a lot of my clients work around me, which is amazing. Because, you know, I might get a job for a massive campaign coming in and I need to move them. And they all are totally fine with that. And that is, that's just how it is. Yeah. Do you know, like...
Do you think still being behind the chair, because a lot of what you do is, you're very involved in campaigns.
Yeah,
a lot of what you do is very creative. Why put yourself through the hassle of still standing behind the chair? Do you still enjoy that? Do you still miss it if you're not there?
I don't miss anything really. Like, but that's the best part of the job. Always has been. Like when I was like fascinated with London Fashion Week and or Paris or Milan or New York or whatever, like it soon gets boring. Like the travel, the sleep. I was sleeping in hostels. You're not really making that much dough. Like I was cutting people's hair within the hostel to make the money up that I was losing. Do you know, like, and the most job satisfaction that's genuine, like to me, is doing clients.
Yeah.
It's building. So now it's about building the relationship, whether that's with a client or whether it's on a shoot or with a photographer. It's about them relationships that you build up. I'm never actually bothered about the end product.
Yeah,
like I never have been, but. The main thing for me is just that relationship, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a lovely space. And so you're still doing your own collections, though. When was your last collection you put together?
Do you know, I don't think
I've seen anything this year.
I don't really do collections, if I'm honest. Like I used to just shoot, like, as and when with my mates and stuff like that, but it's never something that actually drives me.
Right.
Like, I did something last year for Babyliss, and they essentially brought out a new clipper that you could customize, and they wanted me to do a video. I'm an ambassador for them, so I do videos regularly for them, and they essentially just wanted me to do cutting someone's hair in a chair.
Right.
And I was like, this could be so much more. So my brain goes poof. And then I recorded a song sampling the clipper with one of the music studios. It was under my old salon in London, and I sang over the top of it. It literally, like, the producer, Flo, the producer, wrote the beat and then went for a cigarette. I wrote the melody and the lyrics. He came back in, we recorded it, and it was done. And then, like, all the coats were all customized. They were all black and pink, like the clippers. It was very punk and DIY, because I was trying to get through that customization approach. We had contact lenses in. Even on the day of the shoot, I got everyone to throw paint on me, so I wanted to show how committed I was to it. Smashing guitars, like, it was a really big build up that, and again,
amazing.
I had a massive opportunity with shooting that. And even that, the end product, I wasn't happy with. And someone said to me the other day, they were like, and it's how we met, his girlfriend modeled for me in it. And he was like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. Like, Laura's been like chatting about you loads. And he was like, that shoot that you did was amazing. And I said, I wasn't happy with it. And he was like, yeah, but you did it. Like, and the fact that you set out to do it and you did it, he was like, even if you're not happy, you've 60%, like, or whatever it is, 62% or whatever, closer to achieving what you thought that you wanted to achieve. And it was a really nice outlook for me, because I'm always disappointed with everything I do. Not necessarily disappointed, but I'll pull it apart for the next time.
Yeah.
I it's more of a passing
always
through.
It's always a learning That's experience it. Like, rather than a finished product.
Yeah, I'm like, this is this. Next time, it'll be better because we'll be more organised or whatever it is like that's
in Babylon's it. Like, Babylon's like it?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't sound at all Babylon. It wouldn't be any of my...
No.
It wouldn't be any of my go-to for Babylon.
It was... We did Men and Women on the shoot and it was like, you know, different hair textures, and it got published in like the magazines and stuff like that. But like, for that as well, like, what do you then do with the end product? Like, what, you post it on Instagram and that's it. So I did a whole 2-month campaign that I planned. It took a whole year to, from start to finish, including the shoot, it took a whole year to get it out there. And like, literally from November to November, like from when we first went and filmed the song, that was the start, because that was going to set the tone, the energy, like how much the rest of the video is going to come about. So for me, it was like putting a piece together and like really working out how we can stretch it and get the maximum coverage for it. But
huge creative journey for that, though, surely.
Yeah,
that's
massive. Yeah, yeah. It's stressful, do you know? Like,
yeah.
But I literally love living in that state of adrenaline, do you know? And that's what put me in hospital.
Right.
Not the shoot, but just that in general, you know? Like, living like that for 15 years, it takes its toll.
Mm. Yes. And so you mentioned the Babyliss connection. And I think the ambassadorship always kind of comes up quite a lot, but yours certainly sounds like it's a really proper bit of job. I think ambassadorships are maybe not quite so involved.
Yeah.
But you've certainly kind of come, did we meet or did I catch up with you afterwards at the calligraphy thing?
Yeah.
Because I'm quite enjoying calligraphy.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's banging.
Which I don't know how far it is out there. I don't know. It'd be interesting for comments if anyone knows what I'm talking about. But, you know, I'm not wanting this to be a sales pitch, but as a tool, I'm quite enjoying having it as a part of my kit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've seen you do some stuff where it's start to finish. I don't think I have at the moment, and I've not seen the application needed for me, but I'm certainly liking using it on textured hair. I'm loving it on textured hair.
Yeah.
Are you enjoying, I mean, obviously you got involved with Frank in the beginning of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you still enjoying it as a tool?
Absolutely love it, yeah. So basically that opportunity came to me, Tamar walked through the door and she was sort of like the facilitator between international and the UK and bringing a new product into the UK, and she showed me it and I was just like, oh, I'm in. Like, it's like the engineering, the aesthetics of it, like the science behind it was just like, and then I had the opportunity of meeting Frank, and it was funny, I was like, oh, it's just a razor, I can use it, I razor cut all the time. And I remember him showing us some stuff and I was like, and I was doing some models that day and I was like, oh, I'm gonna, so I went in the back, looked at all their online academy, really swatting up, like, because I wanted to, you know, I was essentially an ambassador for them then. Mm. I wanted to impress, and I hadn't even used it, do you know, like, so did that. And then the outcome that I'm getting from it and the movement and the health of the hair and like all of that that comes with it is just a great tool as an addition to scissors and clippers that I'm already using.
I think that's the bit, I've spoken to a few people about it and they're like, oh yeah, another razor. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of not. I mean, I think you've got to kind of play with it. Are there going to be, are there opportunities, not that I'm trying to flog it, but are there opportunities for people to play with it at some point? You've got more events coming up
100%, anyway. 100%, yeah. We just started doing this play dates tour as well. And that's it. Like, you know, you can go down heavily publicising it on and using marketing strategies online and stuff like that. But the real magic is when someone holds it and uses it. Like, the only way to do that is doing live events. So we essentially get, you know, a handful of models come in, me and Frank or the artistic team, we do some demoing, we do like, it's like a CDU type thing. So we do a bit, they do a bit, or mannequin heads, and then they get to use it and really see the benefits of the tool.
Yeah. And no, I must admit, I came to that thing. I think I was cutting one half of, there was me and Koss.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing half a mannequin each, which I don't think I've done a dolly myself for a long, long time. And it was very, very amusing to play with it, and we've subscribed and we're enjoying
it. Yeah, the movement that you can create from it is like unmatched. Like, what you, when you cut it with the pen, like whichever way you cut with it, the hair will fall that way from the ends of the hair. Yeah. So like doing that with anything else, you have to manipulate the texture and also sacrifice some of the density of the hair to create the same movement. So it's I use it for the right things when I want to use it, you know, because I know what it can achieve.
Well, I'm just amazed. I mean, it definitely brings out more curl, and I'm quite like that you can control the direction. Yeah, no, listen, I'm so, I don't want to,
we'll have to do a little day together.
I'm not trying to flog it. I do quite enjoy it. So what's next? Beautiful studio that presumably you're not working very often in. Are you still doing your campaigns coming up?
I do work in it a lot.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Lauren's working in there today and I shoot a lot in there. Do you know, like every week there's something going on.
Cool.
Whether it's just talking to camera, doing stuff like this, or like actually like producing hair, do you know, like for brands. We do a lot of like content and stuff in there. I do a lot of like UGC stuff. So I shoot a lot of stuff that's nothing to do with hairdressing. Essentially, it's not about the individual creating the content. It's about the content that you've done and then you sell it to the brands. So I've got a portfolio, I pitch it to brands, whether it's cookware, drinks, whatever it, luggage, nappies, whatever it is. And then you then sell it to the, so what's next? I don't know. Honestly, I'm like literally living the dream right now. Like I've hustled fucking hard for it. And I have an awesome balance, but it's still not enough.
How long have you been doing this? How long has it taken to get awesome balance?
I don't know, 17 years or something like that.
Oh, okay. It's hard to tell, mate. You've got such a peachy complexion. It's hard to gauge how long you've been doing this.
Yeah,
and I think it's interesting that you've had this career that you've really, you have controlled. You're like, I'm doing this, now I'm not, I want to do this. You've been very controlled in it. And it's still taken that amount of time for you to kind of go, actually, I'm liking what I've diversified in. I'm liking, this is a good place to be.
Yeah.
Whereas I speak to a lot of people who are maybe a year into the industry that are disappointed they're not there.
Yeah. All right,
and I think the journey's kind of, you could, would you skip out? You'd want those 16 years. You want those experiences.
It was amazing, yeah. And like there is no real balance. Like, this is what I've discovered for myself. There is no real balance. Sometimes you have to work really hard, and other times you don't. And whether you enjoy them down times or the highs of working really hard, like, that's up to you. But like, that is what balance is being able to pick and choose the jobs that you want. Like, you still have to work really hard for 2 months for a show or whatever it is that's coming out. Or you might be on set doing a campaign and you're on set for 20 hours or whatever it is. But then there'll be days where I can just take my daughter to school and like hang out with my son. Do you know, like, and essentially that's what it is about, like being able to pick and choose them moments and saying yes and no to the right opportunities. I think that's also really important. Like, saying no to things is, because at the start you don't.
Well, I think that's it. You know, I speak to so many people who at a very early age are kind of that ambassadorship with different, have linked themselves with products. And I'm like, it's very early. You know, enjoy the journey. And I think, you know, I'm pleased you're in a happy place, but I'm sure that journey's not over. And I'm intrigued with what happens next, mate.
Yeah, it's all about self-development, isn't it? Like,
I think that's it. You know, I think that's it. And I think you shouldn't be in such a rush. I think sometimes you've got to savor, you know what I mean? That some things are good, some bits are bad, and some bits indifferent, but they're all part of that.
I feel like ambassador roles get thrown about way too easy as well, especially with like, and it, like, if you're not getting the right thing, like, it's pretty pointless. Like, if you're not getting paid right, if you're not getting the right amount of work out of it, if you're not associating yourself with the brands that you want to be associated with, like, and you're just doing it for social media.
Offering a bit of discount with your name.
Like,
it's a strange, I haven't really, let's not start that one, but it does feel like there's it does feel like there's something in there. We might have to do an ambassador one.
Yeah.
Kai, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate it. It's been such a joy to meet you. Like I say,
we've
done a bit of kind of, you know, it's been to and fro on DMs, but today was the first proper time we sat and chatted. Yeah, really appreciate you being,
thanks for getting
being
me
so
on.
Frank and honest.
Cheers, dude.
Thank you very much. Hi there. If you've got a story or know someone with a story or have a topic that you think we should cover that we haven't yet, please get in touch. We'd love to speak to you.